And one thing that I have learned over the last, I can hardly believe it every week when I talk about that I've been practicing now for almost 40 years, is whether or not you are a celebrity or rich or poor or black or white or Jewish or Christian or Muslim or gay or straight or trans. The reality is, of course, is that we all go through so many ups and downs in our lives. And particularly in the past year, if you can believe it, it's going to be a year in March since the pandemic changed our lives in so many ways. And according to studies, specifically the American Psychiatric Association, 30% of Americans now are claiming that they are feeling clinically depressed, and that number translates into 40 million adults. That's 40% of Americans who are suffering, and really suffering from a variety of different anxiety disorders. And even though things are looking a lot better, we're still not in a place where we know and we feel that things are going to be going back to a more normal kind of a life. I mean, the impact on the virus, let's face it, it has affected jobs and our health, our physical health, our mental health, our social relationships, you know, real concerns about whether or not I'm going to be able to pay my rent and to buy food, basic things that most people typically do not even think about, leave alone worry about. And yes, the stimulus checks, they have helped. And of course, we're still waiting to hear what Congress is going to have to say about the next stimulus check. And I know people who are waiting, who are really counting on an additional stimulus check to make their lives somewhat easier. And of course, the issue of homeschooling. And I talked to so many parents, and there's worry. Says is that the risk is very, very low. The other study tells us that they're not exactly sure. We hear that sports arenas are opening. There's confusion, even with the vaccine, which, by the way, is still a challenge for so many people to be able to access. I know myself and my husband, we have tried every single website to see whether or not we would be able to find a place to be able to get a vaccine on the Upper West Side. And I have to tell you, so far, we have not had any luck at all. And there's still the concern about getting sick. Are we going to continue to have to wear masks once we do, in fact, get the vaccine? So the fact is that people, the majority of people, certainly the people that I talk to, are still feeling disconnected, alienated, and many people who live alone are feeling so lonely. In fact, we talk about a loneliness epidemic. And if you had told me prior to the pandemic that I would be encouraging all of you to be on social media and to be on as many Zoom calls as you possibly can so that you're not going to feel so lonely and that you are going to be able to have some connection with people, I never would have believed that that would have been my position. And yet it is exactly the computer, the Zoom and the Skype that has helped millions and millions and millions of people feel connected in some way. I mean, I look at my own practice. I have not seen a live person, a live patient since last March. And I am not at all sure when my practice is going to go back to normal, when people will be coming to my office and I'll be able to give them a hug. It's been a very, very, very surreal year for all of us. And one thing that has happened, and I think it's a good thing, is that the calls to mental health helplines are surging. And what that means is, of course, well, it means that people are feeling depressed and anxious and worried and scared. But it means also, and I think that this is a really positive thing, that people have given themselves permission when life is starting to feel just so, so difficult, to reach out and ask for help, because I certainly find that life is way, way too challenging to navigate all of the ups and downs on our own. And this is exactly why I love to host the Ask BD show. And as many of you know, I've hosted many, many call-in counseling radio talk shows over the years. And I think it's a good thing. It gives people an opportunity to be able to reach out and communicate and express their feelings. And of course, emotional communication and problem solving, that is what we all need to do. And we need to do a lot better job in doing that if we hope to be able to resolve issues that get in the way of our lives and our relationships. And I'm hoping that people, now that spring is almost here, that people are going to start to exercise a lot more and eat a lot less, because that is so important. The studies are so clear about the importance of exercise. It actually happens to be a wonderful, wonderful antidepressant and anti-anxiety. And, you know, one of the other things that I know Dr. Gary Null, we talk about this every single day, is the importance of being aware of what kinds of foods that we are consuming. And of course, the plant-based diets and the fruits and the vegetables and the grains. And I know that sometimes it's just easier to grab that donut, but it can certainly have a terrible, terrible impact on your system if you are not conscious, if you are not mindful, if we do not have sufficient self-discipline, again, to do the things every single day that are actually in our best interest. And of course, Dr. Gary Null, he talks a lot about eliminating toxins from our life, chemical toxins. I talk about chemical toxins too, but I usually talk about toxic people. And if we allow toxic people in our lives, and that includes friends and family, you know the kind of negative impact that having toxic people in your life, how it affects us emotionally and psychologically and also physically. And when you're feeling down and you're not exactly sure what to do, try practicing some positive visualization. Think of something pleasant, whether or not it's the beach or the sun, something that is going to take you out of yourself and of your lows, even if it is only for a few minutes. And of course, dancing and listening to music. I know that when I'm having an anxious day, there is nothing like Broadway music that really helps my spirit. So again, we need to understand the things that we cannot change. We cannot change today what is going on in Congress, an example. But today, and if you haven't started your day today in a positive way, tomorrow we all have an opportunity every single day to be mindful and to do the things that can help our lives become happier and more joyful. And, you know, I was looking at the Australian Open. As all of you know, I have been a competitive tennis player all my life and still am. And I was looking at the teams. When I was playing, I was number 10 in Canada as a junior. We didn't have teams. My father was my coach, and we worked on fitness and we worked on my serve. But, you know, what was really interesting is to look in the last number of years of all of the support that great athletes and great performers have. So what I'm really saying to you is that you may not be in a position to have a team as such, like a Serena Williams, but you can surround yourself with people, with friends, hopefully, and family who will be able to buoy you up when the tough gets going. And before I introduce my guest today, I want to say something about how we in the mental health frequently miss the boat. If somebody is coming in and they are presenting with symptoms of depression, I think one of the first things, and a good therapist would do, is look at family of origin issues and unfinished business and skeletons in the closet. But I think that one of the things that we in the mental health profession really need to do a lot better job at is looking also at potential physical issues, hormonal issues that also may be explaining our symptoms of depression, our symptoms of anxiety, and sometimes our symptoms of suicidal ideation. So I have a really terrific guest who I am so looking forward to introducing to you. So welcome, Dr. Melnick.
Hello, thank you for having me.
So nice to have you on the show, and I want to give you your proper introduction. Dr. Melnick is a reproductive endocrinologist who is the founder of Advanced Fertility Services and a specialist in the treatment of hypothyroidism, which of course you're going to explain to us what that is, menopause, in vitro fertilization, and ovarian rejuvenation. Dr. Melnick is also the author of The Pregnancy Prescription, a guide for couples navigating the torturous road of infertility treatments in their quest to give birth. And Dr. Melnick, you also founded Advanced Fertility Services in 1983, which was, it was so interesting to read this, the first outpatient in vitro center in New York City, and was one of the first physicians in the world. And I'm so eager to find out about what this platelet-rich plasma PRP therapy is for the treatment of menopausal symptoms, intimacy issues, and age-related infertility. An advocate of a natural approach to the issues facing pre- and post-menopausal women, and I know that there are many, many post-menopausal women who listen to the Ask Beattie show, Dr. Melnick is certified in the use of bioidentical hormone pellet therapy, considered to be a key to restoring hormonal balance during a potentially difficult time in a woman's life cycle. So there are so many questions and so many issues that we are going to be discussing today. So first of all, Dr. Melnick, what is hypothyroidism?
Well, hypothyroidism is a very common condition, and it affects at least 35% of women and 10% of men. And what it means is that the thyroid gland, which is the master gland of the body, is inadequate for producing thyroid hormone, which gives all the cells in the body energy to function. So basically, it puts the body at a great disadvantage as far as energy goes, as far as thinking goes, as far as depression goes, as far as metabolism of food and weight gain and hair loss. These are all very common symptoms of an underactive thyroid.
So is this a test? I mean, you'll talk about the different kinds of tests that are available to be able to diagnose this problem. Is this a test or a series of tests that most doctors give us? Nobody's ever asked me or mentioned my thyroid. It's never come up in a conversation over all the years.
Right. Well, it should. I mean, the most accurate test for diagnosing an underactive thyroid is actually taking a physical and an interview of the patient's symptoms. Uh-huh. And the symptoms are the biggest key. Rather than any particular blood test, listening to the patient's symptoms is the best way to make the diagnosis.
And of course, listening, that is the key, right? I mean, and it's so
Absolutely.
Difficult these days. You know, you go and you see most doctors and you have a 10-minute or a 15-minute visit. where, I mean, not only, as I say, in my own situation, nobody has ever asked me about my thyroid. It's never come up in conversation, nor has anybody ever asked me about my mental health or my sex life or my relationship with my husband. So I think that, you know, people, unfortunately, they have to really do their research in terms of finding a medical practitioner who's going to be able to do a proper workup. So what are some of the common causes, signs, and symptoms that are related to hypothyroidism?
Well, the most common symptom that brings women to my office is hair loss. But again, the other one is inability to lose weight despite a healthy diet and adequate exercise program. And this is the most frustrating thing because, you know, people are doing all the right things, but their body isn't producing enough thyroid hormone to make their metabolism burn their calories. So weight loss is not happening.
So what is, so let's say somebody comes in and they're talking about hair loss or they're talking about perhaps a lack of energy. So what is the first thing that you would do in diagnosing a potential hypothyroidism issue?
Well, again, there's many more questions that have to be asked and answered. Like, for instance, do you experience panic attacks? Do you have difficulty with your recent memory? Do you have foggy thinking? Do you lose your balance easily? These are all questions that, you know, if answered in a positive sense, would indicate that the patient has hypothyroidism. And again, the blood tests are available. Unfortunately, most doctors just check one blood test called the TSH, or thyroid stimulating hormone level, where that level is not abnormal. It's in the normal range for 40% of symptomatic patients. So just being able to ask the questions and get the answers is more accurate by far than that one particular blood test. The most important blood tests, in my opinion, are the tests which test the major thyroid hormone, T3, which is the active thyroid hormone. And so when that is low, then it's a very significant finding that would support the diagnosis. Also, in the old-fashioned days, we did these basal body temperatures, which are very accurate, that taking one's temperature before they get out of bed in the morning, and if their temperature is low, below 97.8 fairly consistently, that means that their metabolism is slow, their body's not producing enough heat as in form of energy, that's why people are tired. So low body temperature correlates better than any blood test.
So interesting, and especially, it's actually kind of frightening that you're saying that with normal blood results that you can have a normal blood test result and yet the diagnosis is missed in 40% of symptomatic women. And yet we as consumers, I mean, most of us, we would never even question, we would never even think, and we would never even know to ask our physicians for a particular kind of blood test. It wouldn't come up, which of course is why I wanted to have you, you know, on the show today. You know, I was fascinated also in something that I read that you had written, that you were close and treat the problem through telemedicine, a condition that is perfectly suited to a virtual consult without even examining the patient in person. That to me is fascinating. So how do you do that without examining us, without touching us in some fashion?
Well, I can certainly look at people, and some of the symptoms are written across their face. Like, for instance, if someone loses the outer third of their eyebrows, that's a very definite sign. I can see if there's hair loss. I can see if there's swelling of the face. And believe it or not, if somebody has a problem with a joint or something, I can look at it on the video. But, you know, the diagnosis and treatment is really based on talking and asking and answering. And that can be done best by video. I don't, you know, I've been doing this for quite a few years for patients who live throughout the United States and in some foreign countries also. And, you know, it works out very fine. I mean, listen, if somebody had needed a pap smear, I don't think we could do that on the video. But I think that for thyroid, when you're talking about things, that's the best venue for it.
So basically, it sounds like for a variety of different symptoms, whether it's depression or anxiety or hair loss, and the list, it sounds like it's a very, very long list where everybody then, I mean, is that what you're basically saying, Dr. Melnick, that all of us, that should be a routine component in our assessments to find out how and if our thyroid is functioning properly?
Right. Well, I mean, look, when I learned about the thyroid, I was in medical school in the 1960s. And in those days, it was before blood tests and before sonograms. And what we had to do is we were taught by clinicians who explained the symptoms to us, and we learned how to ask the right questions and base the diagnosis on the medical history. And it makes it very much more simple. It's like, you know, the duck thing. If it looks like a duck and walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it is a duck, you know? And if a patient has a significant amount of symptoms, they have hypothyroidism and should be treated.
So interesting. You also say that your approach, the way you go about the diagnosis and treatment of thyroid and menopausal issues is totally different, you say, than 95% of the physicians practicing today. So how so? How are you different than 95% of doctors practicing today?
Well, first of all, listening to symptoms and relying upon symptoms more so than blood test results. That's one thing. Because, again, now doctors are taught to look at the blood test, don't look at the patient, you know? And,
right.
So they're always looking at the computer. They're not looking and they're not listening. So that's where, you know, I differ. I'm proud to say that I'm an old school doctor in that respect. And so that's one thing. Number two is using natural prescription medications for both hypothyroidism and for menopause. Synthetic hormones are not good. One of the most frequently prescribed medications throughout the world is Synthroid, which is a synthetic thyroid hormone that doesn't work, again, in 40% of the cases, does not help people relieve their symptoms. So, again, that I use the old-fashioned, it's called Armour Thyroid, and it comes from the thyroid gland of pigs, which is exactly identical to the human thyroid gland. And by taking the pills made from pig thyroid, you get a supplementation of the natural hormones that your body needs. And it works much better than the synthetic.
Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully, you know, people who are listening to our conversation right now and who are exhibiting some of these signs and symptoms are definitely going to give you a call. But, you know, you're so right in what you're saying. I had a recent physical with a new doctor for the first time, and I'd like to think I'm in perfect health. And the entire experience was 15 minutes. And it was like, oh, my God, are you not going to ask me this question or that question? And of course, my blood work is done. And what I'm going to do is take a look after the show and see whether or not the blood test that you are talking about that measures, you know, how well or how poorly your thyroid is doing, whether you know, whether or not it was done. So we as consumers, we really have to empower ourselves, I guess, with knowledge and do a much, much better job as the consumer in trying to reach people like yourself who take the time and who have the knowledge to do a proper diagnosis. I mean, it's like in the world of mental health, as you well know, people, you know, will visit a doctor and before you know it, they're on an antidepressant or an anti-anxiety without anybody really looking at the root of the problem and looking to see, are there other things going on aside from psychosocially? Are there other things going on medically that may Yes. explain the, you know, the depression or the anxiety? But I'm also curious, what is the relationship between hypothyroidism and menopause?
Oh, well, I think a majority of cases of hypothyroidism occur around the time a woman goes through her changes. The other times in a woman's life, it occurs at puberty and after having a pregnancy and after childbirth. That these are the key times when women first experience hypothyroid symptoms.
Mm-hmm. And what about the relationship between hypothyroidism and depression, anxiety, perhaps bipolar disorder, and other psychiatric problems?
Right. Okay. Well, the first one is anxiety. Now, what happens is when someone has a low thyroid for a goodly period of time, the adrenal gland, which is the fight or flight gland, tries to compensate for it. And as such, it can't compensate for it, but it just wears itself out. So what happens is that the adrenal gland produces too much adrenaline and puts people in a fight or flight reaction, which is a rather severe one. And this is the basis whereby panic attacks take off. That's why I always ask about panic attacks. But people can just have general freestanding anxiety, and they can't sleep. Insomnia is very common with people with hypothyroidism because, again, the adrenal gland is not producing cortisol in its normal rhythmic pattern, and cortisol levels are at high at night, so people are all wired up at night, and right. they can't get up in the morning when the cortisol level should be high. So you see, it's it all interplays. And depression, again...
It all interplays.
Yeah. And depression, again, that the body does not get enough T3 in certain parts of the brain. And that's what happens. And sometimes if you don't get T3, which, again, is the important thyroid hormone, in other parts of the brain, you might have memory loss, other parts of the brain. It just depends which are most vulnerable to being affected.
You know, I am so curious how many or what proportion or percentage of people in my field, including psychiatrists, refer to you because our patients are suffering from depression, anxiety, panic attacks, and other psychiatric problems. Do you get many referrals from the mental health world here in New York and around the world?
No, I do not.
This is so interesting, but not surprising. It's not surprising to me at all. Interesting to hear what you're saying, though, because we jump, we'll talk about sexual dysfunction what about erectile dysfunction in man? Is there any relationship that you have found between erectile dysfunction, of course, there could be blockages, et cetera, and hypothyroidism?
Let me just think that in usually it's with low testosterone syndrome, men have problems with sexual dysfunction, but it's mainly sexual dysfunction and erectile dysfunction is really due to vascular, where the blood vessels are smaller and narrowed down by cholesterol, plaques, and whatever in men. So the blood flow to the penis is just not there. And using vasodilators or blood vessel dilators, the blood flow is increased and the man can get an erection.
So hypothyroidism is not an issue as such for men
right.
who are suffering
right.
from erectile dysfunction or low libido.
Right. But in women, I find that it's very important because I guess it's sort of mediated through depression. And when people are depressed, of course, their libido goes. But again, you know, in women who are not depressed and are menopausal, this actually is because of a deficiency of testosterone, the male hormone.
People are not aware
of the fact that the ovary produces more testosterone than it does estrogen. And when a woman's ovaries cease to work, it stops producing estrogen and it stops producing testosterone. And there goes libido right out the window.
Right. Over and above being tired and stressed, and over and above not being in a great relationship, and over and above having
right.
the sexual side effects of a multi array of medications, prescribed
yes.
medications and over-the-counter medications. Because, you know, Dr. Bill, like I am seeing, of course, my entire practice, you know, as you may have heard, is on Zoom. I miss seeing my patients live. That is for sure. But I'm hearing more and more from young women in their 20s who are in relationships, supposedly decent relationships, who are talking about very, very low libido, very little sexual desire. And I mean, do you think, and I mean, I'd like to think I do a really very systemic type of an evaluation, but do you think that women of that age, young women, should also be referred to you and make sure that their thyroid levels are really in order?
Yes, well, it's a good thought. And the other thing is that birth control pills can really dampen a woman's libido.
Interesting.
So, yeah, so that's another thing. But I think you're right that there's just so much going on in today's world that young people and old people, we're all under so much pressure and so much information, and our computers are always on, that it does not help one's sex drive.
No, that's for sure. You know, I tell the story how in France, couples, the studies show, have sex a couple of times a week. And here in the United States, you know what the studies tell us?
I'm
frequency
afraid to hear
is here in the United States?
I have no idea. Probably low, right?
Very low. A couple of times. You know, a month. And I'm thinking of a study that I actually talk about a lot. And this was done at Pittsburgh Western Psychiatric Hospital. And ostensibly, the 100 couples who defined their marriages, and they were couples of different ages, as happy or very happily married. You know, one of the statistics that really stood out for me was that 50% of these happy and very happily married women had difficulty becoming aroused. So in talking with you, I'm wondering, it's like, oh my goodness, could hypothyroidism been a part or a component of what this may have been about that of course was missed? You know, it's really interesting that this whole issue
right?
is something that people, you know, we just don't know about. Tell us, and I was very curious about this, what about this platelet-rich plasma, this PRP for the treatment of menopausal symptoms, intimacy issues, and age-related infertility? What is it? Should we be looking into it? Should we be on it? Give us some history and background and recommendations, please.
Okay, sure. Well, platelet-rich plasma therapy has been around for about 20 years. And what it's been used for skin grafts, any area of the body that's not healing properly. And what it is, you take a person's own platelet cells, after separating them out from the entire blood, and inject it into them, so it means there's no foreign tissue being transferred, into the area that needs to be healed. And it's been around for a long time. You know, you hear of athletes getting shots of blood into their, right. you know, muscles and everything. And this is what it basically is. So what happened, this is about 5 years ago, I read this article in an Egyptian medical journal. Luckily, it was translated to English. But anyway, that it was about this doctor who injected a woman's own platelets into her ovaries. And she was like 45 and never been pregnant, been trying for many years. And she was in menopause. And it not only reversed her menopause, but she, you know, became pregnant spontaneously and had a baby. So I had a lot of experience working with PRP in the vaginal area, which, again, is the use of platelet-rich plasma injected in certain areas of the vagina and around the platelet, and around the clitoris, rather, injecting the platelets there to help women with arousal issues and more intense orgasms and painful intercourse. So,
painful,
you know, that works.
Painful intercourse
nicely.
As well. So you're adding that. Yes. To the list of symptoms
for menopause, yes, that's like almost always happens that the vagina gets dry because of lack of estrogen, and sex becomes very painful, and then you know the vagina tissue gets so thin and the nerve tissue is exposed, so with friction it causes a lot of pain, and you really have to regrow the outer cell layer, which you know also causes the lubrication. And that can be done with estrogen, with testosterone, or with PRP.
And what about for post-menopause? Is it something also that you use for a percentage of post-menopausal women?
Well, a specific percentage, because bioidentical hormone therapy works beautifully. But with this, let's say a woman's had breast cancer and she can't take hormone therapy, and she's suffering terribly with hot flushes. So those patients, 50% of those patients, you can stop the hot flushes. In some cases, the periods come back. The libido comes back, at least, again, about 40 or 50% of the patients. But it doesn't last indefinitely. It lasts for 6 or 8 months. And it is a procedure that requires anesthesia to inject the ovaries because they're very small, and it's sort of just the opposite of what we do with in vitro, but it's much more difficult because the ovaries are much smaller in menopausal women than in young women on fertility drugs. So,
it's an option.
It's not the best option. It's not the best option, but for certain people, it's a good option. And again, you know, with fertility, we've had several pregnancies out of 70 patients. So, you know, it gives you maybe a 5% pregnancy rate, whereas we're using donor eggs from a younger woman, we get a 70% pregnancy rate. So, I always recommend using donor eggs from younger women than doing this. But again, certain people want to have their own biological child, so they want to try this, so we will try it with the understanding that if it doesn't work, then they go on to using donor eggs.
Right. At what age do you usually prescribe the bioidentical hormones, and until what age have you found that they are effective and important for women?
Okay, that's a good question. That I'll answer the last one first. That it really depends on a woman's libido and her social situation. And I mean, up till the 80s, if a woman's sexually active, but again, that's a small proportion of people that are sexually active at that point. But there are some women also that get hot flushes still in their 70s or 80s. And they can't sleep well, and they feel uncomfortable. And again, you know, as long as people are sexually active, then it's important to keep the vagina in good condition so that it's not painful intercourse. So those are, the major reasons or the reason why we, would prescribe that. What was the previous question?
At what age would you begin to prescribe, and what would be going on symptomatically that would make you decide to prescribe the bioidentical hormone pellets.
Right. Okay, good. All right. So basically, menopause can occur in women who are as young as 18 or 19. It's called premature ovarian failure. And it can really occur. Yeah, and it can really occur. And premature is like before the age of 35, I would say. And those women are the ones who most definitely need early hormonal intervention because, again, with low estrogen and they don't get their periods, they get earlier osteoporosis, higher incidence of heart disease, and other medical complications. And again, getting back to the thyroid, that that premature ovarian failure is, again, more frequent in young women who have thyroid conditions. Uh-huh. So, again, I see a lot of that. And, you know, the pellets are wonderful and because you don't have to put a patch on every day. The transdermal or the patches are also a very good form, whereas oral pills for at least estrogen is not particularly the safest route because the hormone gets changed really by the liver, transformed by the liver, and it's not really what you want the patient to take. So the pellets are, again, are very small, low dosage that are put underneath the skin in the buttock area. And it's usually a combination of estrogen and testosterone, although certain times we just use estrogen, certain people use testosterone. And the other female hormone, progesterone, is taken every day orally.
So let me ask you this, Dr. Miller. What are you able to do? I mean, this show, by the way, is heard by, you know, thousands of people around the world. There is an archive section, so people who aren't listening live, they're going to be able to listen to it at some other point. But what is being done to get this really important message out to women around the world? I mean, what is being done? You know, when Ann Akers, who was a very close friend of mine and who's working very closely with you, you know, with your book, et cetera, when she reached out to me, I mean, I had to do my research. I knew nothing. I knew nothing about hypothyroidism. I knew a little bit, you know, about the bioidentical hormones. And it was like, oh my goodness, what you're saying is that in my field and in other medical fields, we need to know this information. So what is the best possible way? Hopefully you're going to get on all the major shows in the country to disseminate this so that we as consumers are going to be educated and empowered to be able to do what is in our best interest.
Well, I think that one way is there's some very good websites. One is called Hypothyroid Mom, and the other one is Stop the Thyroid Madness. And both were found by women who are not physicians, but through their own ill experiences with their journey through hypothyroidism, they've learned a lot about it, and they share their experiences with the public. And it makes a lot of people aware of this. I think that they have, you know, the Hypothyroid Mom has over 2 million people that are, you know, registered with it. And the Janie Bothorpe, who wrote Stop the Thyroid Madness, has, you know, written several books of the same name. And she and Dana Trentini, who's a woman who does the Hypothyroid Mom, are really authorities in the field, and they get the information out there. And I think that the younger generation is pretty informed. And I think some folks, you know, in my generation, you know, are not so internet savvy, and they just more or less go along with the flow.
And in the medical schools right now, in the training, is this area something that is being really stressed as important in terms of being able to really come up with a proper and correct diagnosis with patients who are presenting with a multitude of signs and symptoms?
Well, it's not taught at all in the medical school. In fact,
it's not.
They haven't really changed. God. They really haven't changed, gotten away from the one test you need is the TSH level, and you have to use the synthetic thyroid medicine on everybody. And people don't know that it doesn't work in 40% of the people who are treated. So, I mean, and unfortunately, you know, in the old days, this is where old school really was better than modern technology, because thyroid happens to be the one of the things that responds best to diagnosis by talking, and treatment responds best with natural medical medicines that are based upon the patient's response. I mean, I don't look at the TSH level when I'm figuring out the dosage for a patient. I treat them and see them every 4 weeks, and depending on their symptoms, increase their medication. It usually takes, you know, about 3 or 4 visits, but, you know, within 12 weeks, people feel pretty good. And and you can't look at blood tests for doing that. It has to be like old school, like the country doctors.
Well, you know, I'm sitting here in my office, of course. My office is in our apartment here on the Upper West Side. And as soon as the show is over, I'm going to contact Dr. Oz, the senior producer, and she is a colleague. I've known her for years, and we've got to get you on Dr. Oz. And I'm so curious, you know, as a physician, what he would have to say about this. I mean, he has millions and millions of viewers around the world. And I mean, this is a absolutely critical message for all of us to know about and to hear. And, you know, I'm hoping to be able to, you know, help you in whatever possible way I can to, you know, continue to get the message out there. And I will be in touch with Ann Akers, and I will put her in touch with Cheryl Crowley, who's the senior producer at Dr. Oz, and see whether or not we can't get you on the show. I mean, that would be great, wouldn't it?
Well, I'd enjoy that very much.
No, absolutely. Well, listen, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. One of the things that I also wanted to mention is that you are a top doctor. You've been recognized by Castle Connolly Medical and U.S. News and World Report annual physicians rankings. And I know one thing, I am making an appointment to see you, because I am very, very curious myself about what is going on with my hypothyroid. So again, Dr. Melnick, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been incredibly informative, and I really look forward to meeting you and moving forward with your message. So thank you again.
Oh, thank you. It was entirely my pleasure, and I enjoyed the time that we spent together. Thank you very much for having me.
That's wonderful. Oh, okay. We'll talk soon. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Well, everybody, that was Dr. Melnick, and such interesting information, and how quickly we are to jump to plan B and C without getting to the root of the problem. And of course, this is something that I talk about in my world of mental health, you know, all the time. Somebody will be presenting with depression, and, you know, it's very easy to assume a number of things. Of course, you want to always begin with family background. You want to know what's going on in a person's life, in relationships, but to miss the physical component, the hormonal component, the thyroid component in trying to get a really full picture it's really not okay. So that if any of you who are listening right now, if you're wondering, and you may be wrong, and you may not have a thyroid issue at all, but, you know, he was very, very clear about, you know, about hair loss and panic attacks and depression and problems with sleep and low libido. And I think that there is absolutely nothing to lose and much, much, much to gain to contact Dr. Hugh Melnick. And his last name is spelt M-E-L-N-I-C-K. And I know that for me, this has been a very, very informative discussion and preparing for the show, it was so interesting to read about all kinds of things that I certainly knew nothing about, and how depressing it is that people in my field do not, for the most part, reach out to him. And I'm going to have to get the word out about that. And also imagine that this is not taught in medical school. So it's so easy to just be giving people pills without taking the time to listen and to talk. And I'm going to let you know what my evaluation with Dr. Melnick is going to be. I actually contacted him before the show, and I was having some issues with sleep and a little bit of a lack of energy. And I thought, well, since he is an expert in the field, that this was something that I really wanted to check out for myself. So I will keep you posted about my assessment visit with Dr. Melnick. Well, I have a follow-up that I want to do about one of the Dear Beattie letters that I received. And this is a man who I saw for 4 visits, and he may be listening right now. And he said he was never married, never been in a long-term relationship, has been depressed for most of his life. And I think for a while, perhaps, he contemplated maybe there were some things that he could do, do being the action word here, to try to see whether the quality of his life could really improve. And of course, you know, we can talk about the problems and the pain and the disappointment and the history. And this was something that this man had actually done a lot of. He'd been in therapy for many, many, many years. So I had proposed an action treatment plan. I wanted him to come on some of the Zoom programs that I was doing to possibly find a way to connect with other human beings. And what I have found, since I spend so much time on Zoom seeing patients, that the chat rooms, they're really, you know, a great way that you can connect. You're watching your program, you're interacting with people on chat. And, you know, the reality is that you never, never know who you might connect with. So we had a visit. We had a Zoom visit last week. And I asked him what he wanted to do and whether or not he was planning to really invest in my action protocol. And he thought about it, and he said something that was really, really important. It was really important for me as a therapist to hear. He said that I don't want to do it. And I was really upset, because he's a great guy. And I think that with, you know, a little bit of a nudge, that there may have been a way that he would be able to connect, you know, maybe not romantically, but maybe make some friends with people so that he wouldn't feel so isolated. And yet he was really, really nice, but really, really clear. And he said, I don't want to make any changes. And of course, I'm used to always wanting to motivate and inspire people to do the best that they can possibly do for themselves. But then I remember what a professor of mine at McGill University, what he said to me many, many, many years ago. And he said a couple of things. He said, Beattie, he said, we can't change anyone. We can only encourage change. And that's something that we all need to really take in, because it's true. And secondly, and this was something that always stuck with me, is that we can't want more for our patients or our clients than they want for themselves. You know, for example, I'm someone who wants, I want everybody to do well. I want everybody to achieve their goals, or at least some of their goals. I want everybody to be able to improve the quality of their lives and the quality of our relationships. But it really reminded me, and I was very saddened by this, you know, when he said, this is not something that I want to do. So I had to take it all in and remind myself, you know, all I can do is encourage. All I can do as a therapist is motivate. All I can do is give the best possible advice that I know. But in the final analysis, each of us, each of you, you need to make a decision whether or not you're willing to do the work. And frequently the work is not fun, and it's not easy to move forward with your lives. So I just wanted to give you an update on that. And I don't even know where this hour, it's amazing. This hour has really come and gone so quickly. I absolutely loved the interview with Dr. Melnick. Again, that's M-E-L-N-I-C-K. He is in New York City, but he also does telehealth interviews if you want to reach him. So I leave you, my friends, with my two weekly messages. Is one is that hopefully you are going to do everything that you possibly can do, including reaching out and getting help if that's what you need, to improve the quality of your life and your relationships, and to do things that, you know, show yourself that you really care about yourself and love yourself. And of course, secondarily, we all need to continue to do a much, 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 much better job in learning to love each other. So I leave you again with my